Hi, this is Rob Harder with the Nonprofit Leadership Podcast, making your world better. What does it take today to be an effective nonprofit leader? What are the biggest challenges? What are the biggest obstacles that nonprofit leaders face today? Particularly in Park City, what does it take to be a leader in a community where there's over 80 nonprofits? How do we, as nonprofit leaders, effectively fundraise in an economy that's not necessarily solid? All those reasons combined have led me to start this podcast so that we as a nonprofit community and as a larger community can learn from each other as to the insights and wisdom that each one of these leaders that we interview can share. Everything from how to be a better fundraiser, how to be a better vision caster, how to become a better recruiter. So enjoy these podcasts as we ask them very specific questions from their own community as to how they're making their world better. Today we have Melissa Caffey, the Executive Director of the Hope Alliance here in Park City, in the studio. And I found it really fascinating in hearing Melissa's story, talking about all that the Hope Alliance does. I think you'll be really impressed with not only what they do holistically in each one of the countries that they focus on, for example, in Peru and Haiti and other countries, Guatemala included, but they're starting now to do some more local components in conjunction with the People's Health Clinic and perhaps even with the Christian Center. They'll be soon, by January, working to offer a lot of the same things they're doing overseas right here in Park City. So I think you'll really enjoy hearing her heart to serve people and really meet people at their point of need in a real holistic way. So enjoy today's podcast. I think you'll really enjoy it. We are so glad to have you here in the studio. Thanks for being here, Melissa.
Well, thanks for having me, Rob.
Absolutely. Well, you have such a good reputation. And of course, the Live PC, Give PC, you guys did very well again, which kind of put you back on the leaderboard, right? In terms of a nonprofit in the area.
Yeah, we gave it our best shot.
You've done very well, I know, which is great. So tell people, let's start with you. Tell people a little bit about yourself. How did you get to Park City and how did you then get to this position?
Well, I grew up in Southern California. I was a movie industry brat.
Is that right?
Yeah, so my whole family was, that's all anyone did in my family. So it's all I knew, actually, grew up on sets. And then I moved here for what I thought was briefly with my husband back in the late 70s for him to go to law school. We never intended to stay. It was what we thought, temporary. And then we had kids and decided we'd rather raise them here because it's such a terrific place to raise children. So,
did you come right to Park City or did you live in Salt Lake?
We lived in Salt Lake at the time, okay. And we moved up here just as soon as we could. So we've been in Park City, I've been in Park City since 89.
Wow. Compared to most of the directors around here, that's a long time.
It is.
Yeah. That's fantastic. So you kind of know everybody, probably.
But well, I wouldn't say that.
Almost. But
I left briefly. I moved to Florida for a few years and then came back 4 years ago. So, but I certainly a lot of the same people in town. I mean, we have some incredible people. I've known a lot of our board members for 25 and more years. So
that's fabulous.
Yeah.
And then how long before getting involved with the Hope Alliance?
Well, I've worked. I actually finished school at the U and did a bunch of internships. And the last one was at the Utah Arts Festival, at which point, instead of going into advertising and PR as planned, I got sucked into the nonprofit realm.
So that's what brought you in.
Yep.
Interesting. And when an arts related nonprofit.
Yes. It's just that it's that nonprofit thing that you go to work in the morning and feel passionate about it. How many people get to say they are passionate about what they do every day?
That's a great point. So, that's a theme that comes through these interviews.
Mm-hmm.
It's a real passion. Like I said, it's almost like a magnet that draws you into this position and role, even though you may not get paid as much, but that doesn't matter as much because you enjoy what you do so much.
Right. When I moved to Florida in 2004 for a few years, I was going to have a different life and I was going to go back into the corporate world for a little while, and that lasted not even 2 years. And I was like, I have to go back into nonprofit. So
and
I did.
Back, yeah.
And then I moved back here and they were looking for a director at the Hope Alliance, and I had known John, the founder, John Hanrahan, and Glenn Artist, who's now our chairperson, for both of them for more than 20 years. So they said they encouraged me to apply, and what better job? Yeah. So almost 4 years.
Yeah. And talk about the Hope Alliance. How did it start and what's the mission and all that good stuff?
So our mission is to improve the lives of impoverished people, which actually we're tweaking that mission statement just because terms change.
Sure.
But basically we're meeting critical needs through sustainable change. So it's sort of a hand up, not a handout.
Right.
Helping people in great need in developing countries. So we've worked in 23 countries.
23 countries.
23 countries.
That's
either
impressive.
Either being there physically or sending containers. We, at the very beginning of Hope Alliance 15 years ago, we sent a lot of excess medical equipment, drugs, things that people needed, wheelchairs. We used to send containers to foreign countries before.
Just filled with all kinds of supplies.
Just completely full, yeah. Mm-hmm. So the founders, Joe Mitchell, who was a minister in town here, and John Hanrahan, mm-hmm. co-founded it after John had done an expedition and said, we have to do something.
So it came out of the two of them mm-hmm. having a passion to want to do something about the global poor.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. They just were, you know, John was amazed by it. And I think that changed really the direction of his life as well. So he and Joe founded the Hope Alliance in 99, exactly 15 years ago. And then he started People's Health Clinic.
I thought he did
about
too,
a
yeah,
year later.
Right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. he's a slacker.
Yeah, really is. He's got to do more.
I know.
I mean, come on.
Just stop. Yeah. So, and now he actually is a doctor there, which he, you know, that's fairly recent.
Mm-hmm.
So he just has done a lot of great stuff in this community. A lot of people don't know that another board member, David Hederly Smith, who's a Sunrise Rotarian and does a lot for the community. He was the other person, this kind of the other signature on the 501c3 papers, and he's still involved.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So
the founding
our board
group
members
is still
would
there.
Never let him go.
Yeah.
Well, Joe moved away, but
okay.
but John's still very involved. David's still very involved, and we have this. I'm so fortunate to say that we have the hardest working board I know of. They're
it's
just
wonderful.
Incredible people, and they're really passionate about it, which makes it, of course, as the director, it makes me love what I do.
Yeah, makes your job much easier.
Mm-hmm.
And so it sounds like you are the founding director. Is that correct?
No, John and Joe were originally
okay,
CEO
so they kind of,
and
mm-hmm.
director.
Got it.
And then John got sick and left for a while, then came back, then left again, but was always involved.
Okay.
And then Monty Eggett was the director for many years.
Okay.
So, and then I just came on almost 4 years ago.
Okay, that's what you did mention, that 4 years ago in that role. Got
yep.
it. Okay.
Yeah.
So what have you loved most about the job so far?
Ooh, other than the people I get to work with every day, I think meeting and serving the people in other countries and even locally, which most people probably don't know that part about the Hope Alliance.
You have a local component to it.
Well, we do. We've done work down on the Navajo Reservation. First projects.
Okay.
And in fact, John Hanrahan took the mobile, if you remember, well, you may not have been here.
People's
Health
time.
Clinic was a mobile medical unit.
I do remember that. It used to be in the parking lot of the Christian Center.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. So,
mm-hmm.
John, we've taken that, they used to take that down and work on the reservation with Hope Alliance and People's Health Clinic.
Fabulous.
So, but we also have served refugee centers around with vision components. And
right.
we're we are about to start a vision program with People's Health Clinic. They have a grant for the children that aren't being served.
Really?
But there's a lot of adults that are falling through the cracks. They won't get seen. They're afraid to get seen. They don't have any means to do so.
And that would be locally
yep.
in Summit County?
Yeah,
okay.
in Summit County.
Fabulous.
Yeah, so we just got a grant this morning from
Congratulations.
Rotary, thanks, from Sunrise, mm-hmm. to buy frames for the ones that will be that we aren't able to serve with our own collection of recycled eyeglasses. Because
mm-hmm.
we keep about 6,000 on hand, cataloged, ready to go, that we travel with all the time. If we can't meet their needs with any of those, we'll be able to purchase frames and have a new pair for them. So we're
that's
about
great.
To start that as a test case with them, and I think that's really going to benefit the community.
Very much. And,
yeah.
and offline, we'll have to talk about, we work with a Goshute Reservation, and maybe we could do some partnering there.
Absolutely.
Providing some,
if
you have that mobile unit, again, that's fabulous.
Well, we don't still have that unit because
okay,
that was
okay.
given away. I think
okay.
I think it's in Mexico, I want
oh,
to
is
say.
It? Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But we are pretty portable. We load up buses or whatever vehicles, and we take our eyeglass collection that volunteers process. I mean, thousands of volunteer hours every year. People collect glasses for us, scout troops, Lions clubs, Rotary clubs, everybody, schools.
Yeah.
And then others of the same clubs, St. Mary's just did one, Park City Garden Club, they process them for us.
Oh, that's nice.
And then they get bagged and numbered and replaced after they're given out in our collections. So they're numbered, you know, like at 1 through 6,000.
Mm-hmm.
And then the new prescriptions and all the data that goes with each prescription, which is like 6 data points, all have to be entered into the
computers. That's a lot of work.
It's a ton of work.
Wow, so amazing volunteer help.
That's it. We're completely volunteer driven. Mm-hmm. So we're really lucky. And
how many staff do you have? Speaking of volunteers.
3.
Is that right? So 3 full-time staff?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
And then the rest are all volunteer?
Mm-hmm.
That's impressive.
It's amazing. Mm-hmm. We're so lucky. Yeah.
Because you're in a lot of countries.
We are. Currently, we're in Guatemala, Peru, and Haiti.
Okay. So those are the primary ones. Okay, yeah.
Right,
so
now, those are locations. Our focus areas. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So tell the listeners about, what's a typical trip with Hope Alliance? Say in Peru. We'll pick that.
Okay, Peru. Let's see. The most recent one was in, I want to say, March. And that was a lot of dentists doing dental work and dental assistants, plus others that were not medically trained. Well, some were. We had a psychologist that went down and worked a lot in orphanages and with at-risk teens, which was phenomenal. The response
and a mental
was
health
incredible.
Aspect to
yes,
it.
Yes, and that was a first for us, I think.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then other people did health education, oral, we try and educate everywhere we go. So it's not just meeting their immediate need, which will improve their lives immediately by being able to see or having teeth removed that are, abscessed or things. So we try and meet their immediate need, but change their long-term lives. And so like with glasses, we do a lot of vision, eyeglasses. We have machines that read their prescriptions when they walk in the door.
Okay.
And so we'll see 300 to 400 people a day.
Wow.
And we're able to fit about 95% of those with glasses. And if
Remarkable.
To see their faces, to see someone who's never been able to have any kind of eye care see for the first time, it's...
But it's life-changing.
It is life-changing. It's life-changing for them because it allows the kids to be able to learn in school or read, which is a big deal. And then we see, unfortunately, but it's amazing when you're there, we see a lot of elderly.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And they can't see... And we're not talking very old, but they don't have access to health, to eye care. And so they always have to usually have a grandchild or somebody or a child with them. That means that kid's not in school because they're helping them go everywhere and do the shopping and clean and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't just change that person's life. It changes their family dynamic.
Yeah, the whole structure.
And the future of the kids that are involved. So.
And how do you make those contacts locally? Like, do you go in with a team and do an assessment of some type? Or how do you find out what the needs are? Okay.
We do needs assessments in the communities where we work. We go at invitation. You know, back in the day when ours and a lot of other nonprofits started, you've probably heard they had a lot of people went in and said, this is how you need to be doing things.
Right.
This is what you need. And we would build them latrines, or we would build them wells. And then we'd leave.
Mm-hmm.
And then, 6 months later, they'd call and say, can you come fix your well? And we'd say, no, that's your well.
Exactly.
But we wouldn't leave them with the training and the means to do it, to maintain it.
Mm-hmm.
Know how to work it.
Mm-hmm.
So and we just went in and gave them stuff, and there was a lot of ownership.
Okay.
So now they have to have some skin in the game. We go an invitation. We have partners in each country. We partner with as many entities as we can to maximize efficiencies and funds. But we work with all different religions.
Yeah.
We have in Peru, we work with nuns for this Catholic kind of sect of the Catholic Church called INE, I can't even remember what it stands for, but so nuns in Peru. But when we go, we also usually use LDS humanitarian missionaries to translate for us.
Wow.
We work with Lions clubs, Rotary clubs,
schools,
college, universities.
Uh-huh.
So our partners are all over the map.
That's impressive.
And the more we can work with, the better. And in Peru, for years, we were sneaking our glasses and everything into the country, and as
they
often
didn't
as
allow
not,
that, huh?
No, and they very corrupt customs
sure.
officials a lot of places.
They would just
so they would
them.
Say, you know, you can come in for, you know, $2,000.
Yeah, right.
And they'd say, well, we don't have that money, and they'd say, okay, how about $250? So there were a lot of bribes involved and a lot of corruption. Well, about 3 years ago, I met with their government officials, and we have a terrific proven consul in Utah.
I didn't know that.
Like the best one in the country, I think.
Really?
Yeah,
David
Utria, and he's just amazing.
Okay.
So I said, how do we fix this? So we had a lot of government meetings down there, and we are now a registered NGO in Peru.
Okay.
So we do a whole nightmare's worth of paperwork to go on these trips, but they don't touch us in
customs.
That's
nice. Once you're in there, you're set.
We're stamped, and we walk through with the right papers, and we're not sneaking in anymore. And
congratulations.
And we work with the, yeah, thanks.
That was a lot of work, I'm sure, behind the scenes.
Yes.
Only you knew how many hours you were going to put into that.
Yeah,
wow.
It was crazy.
Impressive.
And who knew, you know? So, I mean, this is my first international. In 25 years of nonprofit, this is my first international thing. And,
right.
And it's been an eye-opener.
Yeah, so how much of your time is working directly with in-kind country situations like that? And then on the flip side, I'm sure you've got donor relations here on the state side and of course, directing your staff and directing the volunteers, planning the trips.
Yep.
Give us an idea
of
like
how...
Yeah, you do, don't you? Like, you must be tired. How do you balance it on? What kind of percentage? You have like a percentage of, and maybe it's seasonally, it changes too, but what's
it
your
does.
Percentage of where you invest your time?
It completely changes. In a perfect world, I would do mostly development, donor relations, grant writing, marketing.
Got it.
Those that side
in
of it.
Your role as director.
Yes, I mean, and that's kind of my love. But on the other hand, we need all these other things done, and working with the partners. So our program coordinator does a lot of those arrangements.
Got it.
Once
that makes
we've
sense.
Made the contact and decided what we're doing. And then they make all the logistical arrangements, everything from
in country,
from what water you're drinking, you know,
right.
the volunteers, where they're sleeping, how they're getting around, security, all of that is done in conjunction with our partners. So
got it. Okay.
It's a lot of logistics for each trip.
I bet.
Some more than others. You know.
And how many trips do you do a year?
Somewhere between 7 and 12.
Okay.
So quite a few.
That is a lot.
Yeah. It is.
So
right
almost every month. Depends if you go on the
Yeah, and the tricky part is a lot of it's seasonal. So we'll do, you know, 4 or 5 trips in the summer.
Yeah,
and that's tough. It's easier to spread it out. So.
And how many do you go on?
You know, generally a couple, maybe.
Okay.
We have our board members are very seasoned veterans at this point, so they lead a lot of the trips.
Oh, that's nice.
We have other volunteers that have done it for so long, they can lead the trips.
Mm-hmm.
And our program coordinator goes, so I don't generally feel the need to go do that. I try to go everywhere we work.
Sure.
And go in advance and set it up.
Mm-hmm.
So I just took a group from our board when we were partnering with Moran Eye Center
mm-hmm.
in Guatemala in August. Then a small group of us went up to a whole new area we've been invited to to work at that's about 25,000 indigenous Mayan with no access to eye care, no access to dental. Their water's terrible. Their infant and maternal mortality rates are high.
Yeah.
They have one health clinic, and the same person, their director there that I had met with 6 months prior, when we got there, they had just closed it down except to emergencies. Because of government funding, nobody had been paid in months. So
oh my goodness.
It was heartbreaking.
No kidding.
So we're looking to possibly at the options of doing a sort of a community-wide project there. It's in a very poor area of northern Guatemala and in Baja Vera or Alta Verapaz. And it would be hopefully a joint water project, maybe a medical clinic, and possibly a biogas digester, which we've done other places.
Oh, interesting. Huh.
And do you know what?
I have to say, is that an...
It's fascinating. It would be the perfect place for one, but I don't even know if they know what they are yet. So we were staying at and working at a school that's about 300 local kids, 80 of them board there because it's too far to their villages to go to school.
Right.
It's run by a sect of the Catholic Church of priests, mm-hmm. and there's a nun doing a 3-year stint there, and we know her because her sister, who's also a nun, so sisters,
I love it.
In Peru, had worked with us in Peru and said,
no, recommended,
could you
the
come
connection?
Look at this place? I've never seen any place that needs that much help. Mm-hmm. So we went and took a look, and a biogas digester, what it is this is this huge school.
Okay.
And a biogas digester we've done in Nepal and other places. It's a big kind of an underground cistern, underground thing where human waste goes.
Okay.
And animal waste goes. So you need you need a lot of waste. And if you have 300 people going to a school, you
have a lot of waste.
And they have a pig farm.
Interesting.
And a chicken farm.
Uh-huh.
And
it's an endless supply there.
It is. And we went into their kitchens that are cooking for all these kids, and it was nothing but smoke. I mean, you could barely breathe. So these people, and this is very common in developing areas, they're burning up they have to use fires, cook by fire, so they're burning up all their own resources.
Yeah.
And they all have respiratory problems.
I figured that, right.
Yeah. So
interesting.
The biogas digester, it all goes into an underground container, and it comes back up as gas, and it goes to burners, and so it's a clean burn.
Mm-hmm.
And we've done them in a lot of homes and little villages in Nepal and other places. But
that's fascinating.
So we would love to do one at this facility.
Okay.
But, so we're kind of, it's hard. We balance the short term plans. You know,
sure.
Like how many trips are we going to have to Haiti this year, and how many to Guatemala, and how many to Peru, how many here, and then we have to balance that with looking at long term funding at these kind of community wide. Project. So we want to do both.
Oh, I can see that. So say someone's interested in going to a trip. How do they find out about it? And then what kind of is entailed in a trip if you're a volunteer?
Yeah. Well, volunteers fund their own way.
Okay.
And
what's the cost typically?
It just depends on the country.
Okay.
I think, for example, the trip, we're having one in February that our chair, Glenn, is leading.
Okay.
And that is $1,800 for air and everything.
Wow, that doesn't seem as much as I think it would.
I know.
Yeah, that's a pretty good price.
And the only thing it doesn't include are tours, which there won't be a lot of time for.
Mm-hmm.
But they may, some people, they're going to be in Antigua. So they like to walk around the marketplace and see Antigua. When we were there, some of the people went and hiked the volcano, and that's one tour.
Mm-hmm.
Or some people went and saw one of their coffee plantations. And how
that works. Fun.
Yeah, so... it's different. Those tours are inexpensive. Whereas if you go to Peru, most people want to go see Machu Picchu.
Sure.
And why wouldn't you?
Exactly.
And to see that, you have to fly in. And everything in Peru goes in and out of Lima. So no matter where we work, then they'll have to fly up to Cusco and to go to Machu Picchu, which they usually do at the end of the trip for a few days.
Got it.
That adds on. So Peru's the most expensive to fly to.
Okay.
So that trip can run between, $2,700 and $3,400. Haiti's about the same as Guatemala.
Okay.
So they're less expensive.
Lower end. Okay. Yeah.
And a lot of people go, especially high school students, which it's such an amazing journey.
Oh, what a life-changing thing for them. Exactly.
It makes them these little humanitarians that we're growing.
Yeah,
They're incredible. The Park City High class went in June with George Murphy and 20 of the kids, and those kids were the most amazing class we've ever had.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Fabulous.
And they're still, two of them, in fact, we just had this giveaway service trip, and we're trying to make a decision on the winner by Sunday, and two of the kids from that class are two of the judges.
Oh, that's perfect. I love it.
Of the six judges, so
nice.
It's really neat that they're still really involved.
Yeah.
And their Key Club and their Honor Society are funding two scholarships for kids
there
right now for boys that wouldn't
really good
otherwise be able to stay in school. So
who normally comes and again, how long is it? Is it a month trip?
No, it's usually about 10 days.
It's
usually 5 days of working.
Okay.
And then you have travel to and from.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you're lucky, you have a day or two of tours, depending on. Because most people don't have that much time to give
up. I wondered about that exactly. Okay.
It's
10
hard.
Days sounds more familiar. Mm-hmm. Or, more what people can do. And is it mostly high school students, college students? Is it adults? Is it a whole range?
Whole mix.
Okay.
Yeah. We usually about 14 is a normal and up.
Okay.
Is what we'd like to see. But we've had 12-year-olds that have worked their tails off from 7 in the morning till 7 at night, mm-hmm. and never batted an eye. So a lot of it depends on the kid's maturity.
Got it.
But the great thing to see is our families.
I wanted the families go, yeah, as mm-hmm. a whole family.
Father, daughter, father, son, yeah. mother, mm-hmm. daughter, and we've seen it all, and that's really... It's a really special thing for them to
yeah.
share.
Oh yeah,
And the perspective, they get that joint perspective, mm-hmm. and they often stay involved afterwards. And yeah. you know, oh,
fabulous.
And we have people that take each teen as mm-hmm. they get old enough. So
they had a certain yeah. year. Okay, it's their turn to go.
Mm-hmm. So we have an eye doctor that took one of his daughters last year to Guatemala, and now he's looking to take another one. The next one, he's taking each one of his kids on a service.
Oh, that's
project.
A great idea.
Yeah, it's excellent. Just really special. And some of them do mm-hmm. fundraising themselves.
I wondered about that. Yeah. So that's kind of again on their own. So the organization does fundraising as a whole. But if you were to go as a volunteer and you're listening to this, you would just do it all on your own.
Yep.
Okay.
You know, some just pay for it.
Yeah.
And then others. Mm-hmm. We'll raise funds, high school students especially.
Mm-hmm.
We have a private high school that goes as a group with some parents in Ogden, for example, every mm-hmm. couple of years. And they send out letters. We have kind of pre-done letters that they can personalize.
Got it.
They send them out to all their family and friends. Yeah. And it's amazing how quickly it adds up.
I bet.
You know, we had overachievers in Park City last year mm-hmm. that actually got refunds because
they raised so much money. That's great. You're like that could just go to the Hope Alliance.
I know. But well, they first said pay them their own, and then they all their friends gave, and they were But
that's a wonderful problem to have.
I know it really is. So mm-hmm. some work really, really hard at it, and some just it just depends on the circumstances.
And how big are the groups typically when they go?
Vision clinics, usually between 15 and 20 people.
Okay.
That's a good number. Mm-hmm. Closer to 20, especially if you've got some Spanish speakers.
Right.
Because otherwise we have to recruit in country.
Okay.
And then where we go, we require almost that many on the ground there.
That they meet. Mm-hmm. You meet up
so
with.
So we require them, for example, to supply volunteers to do half the work. So there's sweat equity involved.
That's
if you want us to come here, you're going to help with transportation.
Yeah.
You're going to feed us our volunteers lunch.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to provide translators if possible.
Mm-hmm.
And then we use local volunteers for registration, for
Love
running.
It.
We run the glasses back and forth from the suitcases because each person, we try to find 5 to 10 pairs of them to try on first, and they mm-hmm. all have to be pulled from the 6,000 there in order. So we have just tables and tables and tables, and they have to run and pull each number and then put them all back.
Right,
So
the tediousness, that's a lot.
And it's hard work. I mean, everybody works hard. But they make great volunteers. And,
I bet.
And then our people get to kind of share culture with them and make friends with them. So it's not uncommon for them to stay in contact afterwards, and they all are Facebook friends,
fun.
And they
social
post
media
pictures.
Helps. Yeah.
Social media is making it a lot of fun.
I bet.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have that one-time trip, but you can stay friends for years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have a volunteer coordinator who's over the vision program, who's an optician in Salt Lake, and his dad is an eye doctor, and he leads trips to Peru every year for us. And he's friends with all the translators everywhere, the volunteers everywhere. It's hysterical. He's got just like this whole network of people in Peru that he's worked with over the past few years.
How fun.
It's really fun. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, switching gears a little bit. So back to your role as an executive director. We've had a lot of directors on this show, of course. And so talk to me about that and your role. Number one, what do you love about it, about that role specifically? And then what are your biggest challenges?
Okay, well, I have notes.
All right, all right.
I would say my favorite part is the people. There's just, there's no question.
Mm-hmm.
And doing what we do, often you get to see the immediate impact. So whether it's repairing a roof in Haiti on a shack, or helping with that, or hiking 4 hours to bring school supplies to people that have never had them, or a pair of glasses to someone who's never seen well. All that is
it's very hands-on, it's immediate. Yeah.
It just changes mm-hmm. everything about your perspective on the world. So I feel really lucky with that. Challenges, funding, I think every nonprofit.
Constant issue.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's a constant issue. Ours is a little bit different. A lot of, there are 80-something nonprofits in Park City alone.
Yeah, like 85, alone. I think. Yeah, Katie Bartel said.
Yeah, I mean, it's a crazy number. And mm-hmm. and I remember back when it was over 100. So.
Oh, is that right? So yeah. It shrunk down a little
it
bit.
It actually has yeah, gone down a little bit. But I would say in our case, and I think for most nonprofits, is diversifying that funding so you're not always going back to the same people and driving them crazy, mm-hmm. looking for other ways to raise that isn't necessarily event related.
Right.
And the time for donor stewardship, I think everybody, that's a challenge for every
right.
every nonprofit.
Oh, it is.
Luckily, our board does a lot of that and is actually planning on doing a lot more.
Is that
so,
right?
Yeah, and that
so
will...
So you rely heavily on your board
we
to
do.
Do fundraising.
We have, well, not just fundraising, but like stewardship, working with the
okay.
donors.
Okay, and really, yeah, managing mm-hmm. those donors.
Yeah, so I think they're going to take a more active role in that in order to be more effective for us.
That's excellent.
And to really let them know our donors how important and grateful they are, because as you may have the same challenge, I mean, it's always hard to get your story out there. It's,
sure,
you need
it
to
is.
Tell that story. And we just did a survey recently as part of our strategic planning a process that we're in right now. Maddie mm-hmm. Shearer's been helping us with
oh,
that.
Oh, fabulous. Mm-hmm.
And we did the survey, and we're still surprised when people say, who's the Hope Alliance? You know, what,
so
who
you
are they?
Tell us about that. Are you just pulling people in the community, kind of generically?
Mm-hmm.
Or pulling like churches? Or
we were pulling donors and trip participants and volunteers. And then we
and
did,
even amongst that group.
Right.
There's confusion. Huh?
Well, or they just see you as one dimensional.
Okay.
Oh, they do
right.
vision.
Right.
Or, oh, they do
right.
they do medical.
Mm-hmm.
Or they do dental. And,
right.
And so they only see us in one. Or they do clean water. Whatever. They only so it's hard to get your story out there that you're doing, you know,
more
all of the
holistic,
above.
Yeah, right.
Much more holistic. And so that's a tough one to tell. We have to share that more and more because a lot of people only knew one side of it.
Yeah.
And the other one, I don't know if the other challenge, I think, that I don't know how much it's been discussed, you know, on this, but
mm-hmm.
is sort of donor and volunteer engagement and
okay.
retention. You know, we have somebody that'll go on this trip and they can't say enough and it's all over Facebook and there's millions of pictures and there's, you know, this was life-changing.
And do they and fade then, away then eventually?
And then they fade away.
Yeah.
It's like they've done it.
Right.
Okay, I've done that. You know, there's my
that,
bucket
but,
list item and
right.
boom. And so that always surprises us.
You have to re-engage them or keep them engaged over the long
mm-hmm.
haul.
Yeah.
Okay.
So maybe, you know, more of a leadership role for them to
mm-hmm.
teach the next layer or of people, possibly. We're not sure, but.
Well, that is interesting because with your organization, it's interesting versus like PeopleSouth Clinic or even ourselves, where you have people go on a trip that's external to Park City.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, while there may be a little bit of work on the front end with fundraising, of course, maybe a little bit of work at your headquarters, there's not a lot like here bringing them back over and over again. So that is a challenge. I can
yeah,
see that.
It is. And especially if they're out of state.
Well,
not,
exactly.
not everybody's
right.
from here.
Okay.
They're from all across Utah. But we have people that go every other year from Vermont
mm-hmm.
and Colorado and California. And
I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
So
and families go together. So,
okay.
you know, I may have a sister in California who will go with me. Or
right.
something. So it's spread out more. The good news is that allows us to spread out our fundraising. So we don't just fundraise in Park City.
Exactly, that makes sense.
You know, we have people up and down the state in Utah
that's
that
nice.
Go with us and where we fundraise, but also out of state.
So where your primary funds, would you say, come from individuals? Do they come from corporations, from individual grants?
Foundations, individual
okay.
grants. We have, as you know, incredibly generous people here.
Very, yeah.
So we've had a lot of people that have been involved since day one
mm-hmm.
that still are. We have a lot of generous people here in Park City.
Yeah.
We have a few foundations that support us on, you know, every year, thank goodness.
Yeah.
And then grants are a little harder.
I wondered, okay.
Because a lot of people are saying, I don't want to, you know, a lot of foundations say, I don't want my money to go out of, you know, we need
out
it
of
here.
The country,
mm-hmm.
right.
We need it in the U.S.
I can see that.
And so we hear that from locals.
Okay.
So why are you doing that there?
When we have all these needs.
We have needs right
in our backyard.
Here. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to satisfy both, actually. Do the same things locally now that we do abroad and help and partner with that.
That's an exciting development.
That is. It's
mm-hmm.
very nice. And we've
mm-hmm.
done it other places on, like I said, reservations and other places in refugee programs. But I think, you know, people are always surprised that the need right here in Summit County is so big, and you see it every day.
All the time. So, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's heartbreaking.
It really is heartbreaking, but it's much a bigger need than people think.
Yeah.
So it's good. And like I said, we'd love to partner more with that.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have to figure that out.
Yeah, we do. Exactly.
That would be wonderful.
Yeah. So say someone's listening and they want to maybe not just go on a trip, but they do want to volunteer or support the Hope Alliance. Where do you point them?
Our website.
Okay.
Boy.
And your website again
and
is?
And our phone number. Our website is thehopealliance.org.
Thehopealliance.org. Thehopealliance.org.
Yeah. Got it. You need the.
The has to
There's
be in
there.
There's
a lot of hope. Hope names, Hope Alliances around the country. I was really surprised by that. But
is that right?
Thehopealliance.org. We have volunteers that come in every week and help with our eyeglasses program, they help with events. They help with all kinds of things, especially our glasses program. That's a year-round endeavor.
All the time. You get so many glasses.
Yeah. So we're really lucky that way that word has gotten out. So we have a class every month from Park City Day School. They've become little experts at this. It's amazing.
They are so good.
Mm-hmm. It's unbelievable. We have St. Mary's just did a processing for us. Mm-hmm. At the Mitzvah Day at Temple Har Shalom.
Wonderful. Okay.
We went there and they did a bunch of them did glasses processing. So we tap everybody we can.
Wonderful.
And if someone just has a couple hours, they'll come in and help. Someone from Carolyn from our Lions Club. I'm a member of the Lions Club. She comes in whenever we need. We'll send out an SOS and say, we're leaving for Guatemala and our collection's not refilled yet.
Got it.
Or we have very little turnaround time between trips. Mm-hmm. And then we need them redone much faster. It's a lot of work.
But I bet.
We need help with that.
Okay. That's good to know.
And people seem to like doing it. It's not difficult. It's not physically demanding. Mm-hmm. We're kind of fun to be with at our office.
That's
they
a
get
good
an
thing.
Earful. Yeah.
That's good.
Of craziness.
It brings them back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we're really lucky. And oftentimes they'll come and do that. And then they'll say, I want to go on one of your trips.
I figured that would happen, right?
Yeah. And then they hear the stories and get to be a part of that themselves.
They get drawn in.
Mm-hmm. And then we're really lucky. We have locals that have done videos for us before. We need another one shortly, but it's nice to be able to tell your story in pictures.
Absolutely. And particularly in social media day that we live in. Yeah.
Yeah. So
what's coming up next? Obviously, you got a trip in February,
We do.
That's the next big event?
It is. We had one going to India. Usually we have a group of Rotarians that go every year and do polio vaccines.
Oh, fabulous.
This year there weren't enough, so they've just canceled that, which is too bad. It's a doctor out of Salt Lake and part of Salt Lake Rotary, but there just weren't enough people this year. But we've got Haiti. We're waiting to hear. We've got conference calls next week because I think we're going to be beginning a whole new project area there. As well as continuing where we're working right now.
Wonderful.
And so that's going to be exciting.
Yeah.
We don't have dates for that yet. I'm thinking next June or July.
Okay.
And then we've got a huge group going in to Guatemala in May.
Okay.
And then there'll be another one probably again with Moran Eye Center in the summer.
In the summer. Got it.
We have two dates so far that we're trying to find a doctor to go with on our end. We try and take an eye professional on each one of those, or more than one, as well as the rest of for our vision trips. Actually, we take one or two eye professionals, and nobody else needs any special skills.
Oh, wow.
So they're always surprised to find that out. They're like, well, I'm not trained. You don't need to be.
Don't need to be.
We
do
that for you before you go. So,
perfect.
Yeah, it's great. And then, let's see. So we have Peru, Guatemala, Haiti, and then probably in January, we may start this local vision program with People's Health. So we're looking for a time that'll work for everybody then to do that little experiment.
Good.
Yeah.
And they can find out more information again at thehopealliance.org.
Yes.
Excellent.
Or 435-333-3334.
Oh, there's a lot of threes in there.
It's an easy number, though.
So, well, we could talk for a long time. Melissa, thank you so much. It was fascinating to learn more about the Hope Alliance. Truly,
thanks
you do good work and keep up the good work.
Okay, thanks so much.